It is Thursday, February 22nd, 2018. This is the PW Torch Livecast. It's right after Impact Wrestling. I'm Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you tonight?
I am doing pretty well. How are you doing?
Pretty good. We just got done watching 2 hours of Impact Wrestling, and now we're going to talk about it with you guys, the listeners of the PW Torch Livecast. You can give us a call on the show. You can give us a call at 646-721-9828. That number has changed. So the call-in number is 646-721-9828. And you can also email the show at impactlivecast@gmail.com. Andrew, like we do every week, though, let's start off the show by giving this episode of Impact Wrestling a 1 through 10 ranking. Where'd this one fall for you?
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to give this one about a 5. There's a couple kind of bigger things I didn't like. What about you?
I'm a little higher on it than you. I know last week we were both around a 7 or a 7.5. I didn't like this episode as much as I thought. As much as I liked last week's episode, I'm probably around a 6.5 or so. There were still some things I liked about it, though. And I guess some of the bigger themes, more of the production elements, just the general structure of the show is pretty consistent week to week. And it's a structure that I like. So I think that's a positive. What were some of the things that took it down for you?
I think my major issues with this one were those pre-recorded matches they went back to. I just cannot get into those at all. It's just such a weird thing to pretend that they're live and the announcers pretend they don't know who's going to win when it's obvious they know, and you don't get the entire match and they skip around. Those are almost completely worthless. Like, I don't want to see those on TV. So without those, put those in the arena, have them look good, give us a full match. I would definitely be higher, but that's what dragged it down for me.
That's the thing that confuses me a little bit too, because I don't know why they don't just record those in the Impact Zone. I mean, it's not like they don't have those guys there. I mean, the two matches tonight were El Patron and Moose from a promotion in Las Vegas, and then it was Petey Williams and Matt Sydal wrestling at a promotion out of, I think it was Toronto or Ontario. So it's not like you don't have those guys in your building. And I don't know why you wouldn't just air and tape those matches in your own arena. I thought from just a production standpoint, these matches looked better than the ones we've seen in the past. You know, they were lit better. Both of them seemed like they were, especially the one from Vegas had really good lighting. I think you could tell that it was in a building that had, you know, lighting pre-hung and things like that. But I thought both of them looked okay, visually speaking. You know, neither of them – they both look like you were airing a match from an indie show, but neither of them have looked as bad as some of the other promotions we've seen.
That's true. I would still just say they're not anywhere near the level they need to be to look credible. I think a lot of people may be flipping channels and they stumble across that. It looks – to me – it looks really bad. Just something you would watch on YouTube for a few minutes. Just wouldn't really gain your interest. Maybe that could just be me, but those just really just take me out of whatever story they're telling. And they still just feel way too just disjointed for me.
Yeah, the audio is also not mixed well. I mean, Matt Sydal cut a promo at the end of his match, and you really couldn't understand what he was saying. What did you think, though? Because I noted this in my report on pwtorch.com, my Impact Live report. I liked the idea. I mean, that the promotion in Toronto, I forget the name. It wasn't Border City. It was a different company, but they had the hard camera kind of set up in the corner. It was off center and I kind of liked it. I actually think it's something that Impact could probably use. I mean, you and I talked a couple of weeks ago, how the four-sided ring has more square footage to it. And it kind of seems like the hard camera for the Impact tapings is set a little too close to the ring. And it seems like they don't fit the whole ring in the shot at times. That's almost something I think they could kind of borrow. And it would make your show look a little different. You'd see the entranceway in the background and kind of set that hard camera up a little off center, maybe in the corner. I kind of like that, even though the building wasn't necessarily lit to what you would expect a national television show to look like.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind them trying to do something a little different. I mean, you know, in the past they brought in the six-sided ring and that was too different. And that didn't work out so well. But yeah, like I'm still not fully adjusted to their new camera angle yet, which is kind of weird. I'm sure in the coming weeks, I won't make a mental note of it at all. But yeah, it wouldn't be a bad idea at all. Just I think in this new era that they have going on, I would still try new approaches, try new things. They're going to struggle for a long time that it feels too much like the impact of old. And that's the impact that hundreds of thousands of people just quit watching. So anything they can do to just feel a little different, but not distracting, I think is something they should at least try.
What did you think? We talked, you know, new regime with Don Callis and Scott D'Amore heading up creative now and kind of heading up the direction of the company. One of the things that I felt tonight was it's a new regime, but same old thing when it comes to Alberto El Patron. He gets a clean win over Moose. I forget if it was Josh Matthews or Sanjay Dutt, but somebody said that, you know, he's got to be in line for a number one contendership status now. So it looks like they'll probably give him a world title match here at some point. It just seems like they don't learn their lesson with this guy. I mean, it's less than a year ago. And look, Don Callis wasn't there, but that stuff, that news was making the rounds. Everybody knew about it. It wasn't his first run-in with, you know, the law or with just bad PR in general. And Scott D'Amore was there. So to me, this is no excuse. If you're going to continue to push Alberto El Patron at or near your main event, then you're – if something goes wrong, you get what you deserve. And my fear – and again, haven't looked at spoilers, don't know if this is the case, but if that's the match they're going to go in main event their April pay-per-view with, I think it's going to be called Redemption. If it's El Patron versus Austin Aries – from a name value standpoint, I mean, that's a pretty good main event. There's nothing wrong with it. But you get what you deserve if El Patron does something between now and April 22nd or whenever it is to screw up and potentially put that match and that pay-per-view in jeopardy. If something like that happens, then I would feel no sympathy for these guys whatsoever because you know his history. You get what you deserve.
Completely agree. I mean, by now, they should have learned their lesson. Of course, I believe in second chances. But he doesn't seem that he has learned anything. He doesn't take any responsibility for anything that has happened to him over the years. He chalks it up to misunderstandings. He chalks it up to Paige's family. If he was serious and remorseful and, you know, dedicated to Impact, which he is not. He is very vocal that Impact is not where he wants to be a year from now.
That's the other thing.
Yeah. So if that's where they're going, they're idiots, complete idiots. So I have no sympathy for them, and they're only going to hurt themselves from growing. And it's just a horrible call. If he was vocal and wanting to go back, it would be one thing. If he was a great hot star and he's bringing in all these ratings and there's just nothing else you can do because he's the biggest star, but he's not. He's a guy who peaked 6 years ago. I've said it many times, but I just believe it.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to have him contend for the title at some point over the course of the tapings, then I would at least understand it a little bit more because you have a lot more control there. Your television tapings were only over a 4 to 5 day span. He's in town. I mean, for the most part, those things take up so much time. The guys are going from the hotel to the gym to the building back to the hotel. I mean, there's not a lot of time for him to go out and screw something up over the course of a television taping. So if that title shot is somewhere, I mean, it's not going to be March 8th. We know that that's Aries against Johnny Impact. So if it's going to be something after March 8th, but before the end of the tapings, then I at least understand that a little bit more because I think they have a lot more control over it. But they're clearly going to give him a title shot at some point. I mean, they sacrificed Moose tonight, even though it happened in an indie show. They showed the match. So they sacrificed Moose tonight, put Patron or El Patron over him clean in the middle of the ring. 1, 2, 3. Granted, yeah, it was no DQ and all that stuff, but still, it was a clean win for El Patron. And then, the announced team just openly talking about the fact that he's got to put himself in position to be a number one contender at some point. I mean, that's the direction they're going. And I would think, though, that at least if you do it over the course of a television taping, you have more control over, you mitigate the risk. Because there's less of a chance for him to go and screw something up. If it is the pay-per-view main event, I mean, remember, this taping wrapped up when? Late January? It was mid to late January, right?
I believe so, yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking 3 whole months.
Right.
Between the end of the taping and that pay-per-view main event. Granted, yeah. we're already about a month into it now, so there's 2 months left. But that's a lot of time for someone like him who has a history of messing up. 3 months is a long time to give someone, especially with that history, a chance to mess up. I would worry that if that's their main event, they could have potentially have an issue.
Yeah, I mean, he made one of the biggest screw-ups of them for the past couple of years. I mean, they had to change major plans because of him, take the title off him. It was a huge embarrassment, and then they just reward him immediately. Because when he came back, Slammiversary, I believe, he was the focal point of the show.
Bound for Glory, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, there we go. Yeah, Bound for Glory, he was the focal point of the show. I don't get it. I have no idea what they fully see in him. To me, I think Johnny Impact, a heel Johnny Impact, build that up for a few months and then have him go at Austin Aries in a pay-per-view main event. I feel them putting that on TV it's too big of a match, especially since they're lacking in star power. So I would have rather seen them build towards that, but maybe in case they are headed towards El Patron versus Aries.
Yeah, that would have been fine with me. I think you could have done that. I think you could have done Moose versus Austin Aries. There's a match that I don't believe we've seen before. I mean, that's what they're kind of building towards. I mean, could you have gotten, I don't know if you could have gotten Lashley extended, because we all know his contract's up. I don't know if you could have extended him or maybe at least gotten him on the books for one more match. Who knows? I mean, that might be more of a pipe dream, but you could have tried to do something there. I think it would have been smarter for them to do Austin Aries versus even Eddie Edwards or even an Eli Drake rematch. I mean, anything that you kind of can trust, okay, we're going to book this main event in January, and by the time we get to April, we know it's still going to be our main event. We're not going to have to suspend or fire the guy between now and April. Like you said, I think the fact that you're immediately rewarding him when he's off suspension, I mean, granted, in this scenario, law enforcement deemed that he did nothing wrong, and that's all well and good, but it doesn't mean that it wasn't bad publicity. And it's not like, they suspended him for a reason. They suspended him because he has a history of being a hothead and screwing things up. That's why they suspended him. I mean, let's call it like it is here. It wasn't like they were just doing their due diligence and letting an investigation play out. I mean, I feel like if that was someone else that maybe they had a little more trust in, they would have, done what they did with them. I mean, I believe when Bram was going through his situation, he was still on TV.
Yeah, and the thing is, I mean, you could say guilty until proven innocent. Well, he wasn't found guilty, so he should be come right back to work and be rewarded. But I mean, look at what happened to Rich Swann.
Yeah,
I mean, he wasn't convicted, and WWE
doesn't mean you have to trust the guy. At the end of the day, you're a private company. Just because he was innocent doesn't mean that you have to immediately push him back into your main event.
Exactly. It wasn't just that one incident with him. You could go back to the stabbing incident that still makes no sense.
That's right. Yeah, that's the one I keep forgetting about.
I shouldn't laugh over a stabbing, I guess, but who knows what happened there.
This mysterious stabbing that no one ever really explained.
Someday I wish I would know what happened there. But there's just a history of really bad things there. And I don't know. I mean, okay, so they took it. Remember when Jeff Hardy screwed up a pay-per-view main event with Sting? I mean, that was one of the biggest embarrassments of their entire promotion. And I wouldn't have blamed them for a second had they fired him and never had anything to do with them. Somehow that worked out for them, but they took a huge risk that they probably shouldn't have. They have a history of this, and it usually backfires, and I don't think many people will feel sorry for them if it happens again.
All right, let's go to our first break, and when we come back, we'll get to the phone calls. Again, it's a new number on the live cast, 646-721-9828. If you want to get on the phone with us here on the Thursday live cast, it is 646-721-9828. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to your phone calls here on the PW Torch live cast.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. thank you very much for your support.
PW Torch listeners, or PW Torch Livecast listeners, let me give you a task. Pick out a wine that you're going to love, but there's a catch. It has to be one that you haven't had before. Where would you start? Introducing Wink, spelled W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easier to discover great wine because Wink's wine experts select wines matched to your taste, personalized for you, shipped right to your door, and starting at just $13 a bottle. There's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month. Just fill out Wink's personal palate profile quiz, answer some simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask or translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee, or how do you feel about blueberries? Then Wink sends wines curated to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized your monthly selections. Each month, there are new delicious wines, like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé, which I found out from being on Wrestling Night in America. That's how you pronounce rosé. It's not Summer Water Rose. So it's Summer Water Rosé. There are no membership fees. You can skip any month, cancel at any time. Shipping is covered, and if you don't like a bottle that they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/PWTorch, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywinc.com/PWTorch for $20 off. trywink.com/PWTorch. We are back on the PW Torch livecast. It's Thursday, February 22nd, 2018. Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek. We're talking Impact Wrestling with you at 646-721-9828. We're going to go to the phones now. And Ryan in Maryland, you're up first tonight.
First question is about the shows that Impact Wrestling is doing in Louisiana. Heard the power drivers that be banned at those shows. Is this the first time that that move's been banned in Impact Wrestling?
Oh, that's funny. Did they say that on the show tonight? I had not heard that.
No, I think it's just
that I heard.
Yeah. It's just something going around online. I can't remember who reported that, but
It's the first time I've heard of it. I know it's something that I think WCW used to do back in the day, but I can't remember anybody doing anything like that recently. Can you, Andrew?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, it's no blood and no pile drivers. And as far as I know, Impact has never had either one of those. I know WWE kind of has basically banned the pile driver for years, except for when Undertaker comes back, he can do the tombstone. But I do not believe Impact has ever had that ban against them.
Now, I know Don Callis has mentioned on Killing the Town podcast that he doesn't like pile drivers. There's a couple of other moves that I think he's mentioned as well. But just because I didn't see this report, was this something that they were talking about using as a booking tool so that, you know, a heel may use a pile driver to get heat? Or is it something where, like, backstage they're telling guys no pile drivers?
I could be wrong, but I believe it's every promotion kind of in that area is not supposed to use the pile driver, although I don't know who would enforce that. Apologies.
Like a gentleman's agreement type of thing?
Yeah, I read it today, but I can't fully remember what it was all about.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, I had not heard that.
My second question is on Grandma Jenny. Do you know who she is? Like, is she a actor of some sort, or is she just a random person?
I don't know who that was. She didn't look like she was old enough to be a grandma, though. You know, they had made her up a little bit. I could be wrong, but Andrew, do you have an idea who that was? I didn't see any reports on who that was. I know in the past, Impact has just used some backstage personnel, or they've looked to hire, you know, an actor for a day or something like that. But I don't remember hearing at all who that was in particular.
I don't believe I've ever seen her before. If you go back to Claire Lynch, I believe she was just olive oil from, like, Popeye from the theme park in Universal Studios. So they may have just grabbed somebody like that. And I'm completely with you. I was like, is she 50? Is that just a giant wig?
Yeah, it was hard to tell.
that was kind of a disappointment. Not that I ever thought we would see Grandma Jenny, but I didn't think she was very good in the role. So But my guess is a local. God, it could be just a family member of somebody. I don't. If she's a professional actress, she was having an off night.
I mean, Abyss has got to be. I don't know. He's got to be in his 40s, right?
He's like 44, I want to say. 42, 44.
Okay, yeah. I'm just looking at 44. He was born in 73. So if Joseph Park, Abyss, is 44 years old, then you would think that his grandma – so that would mean even if we're a little generous here, if both – let's say his parents had him at 20 and then his parents were born when his grandparents were 20, that would put Grandma Jenny at 84 years old. The lady didn't look 84, I can tell you that.
No.
But I'm not sure who that was, Ryan, unfortunately. But like Andrew said, you know, they're in a theme park where there's shows going on and things of that nature. So they easily have, you know, probably a couple of hundred actors and actresses at their disposal if they really needed it.
Mm.
Okay, and a better question I have for you is on these future stars or wrestling shows and other promotions that they've been using, do those federations get any like discounts on using the Impact Wrestling talent, or do they get any cash flow for providing programming to Impact Wrestling?
That's a really good question, and it's not one that I think we've heard a definitive answer to. I know some of these are partner promotions. I don't know if they're getting a discount on the talent. I know that Impact is serving as the booking agent for a lot of their talent. So they could very well be working out some type of deal, like you said, where, okay, if you allow us to come in and tape the content, we'll give you a break on the guys. But at the same time, I mean, I could see Impact saying, hey, Future Stars of Wrestling and all of these other promotions that I think Dream World Wrestling was the other one from Ontario. You know, you don't have the opportunity to be on U.S. national television all that often. And even though it's not a huge audience, 300,000 people is still a much bigger audience than these promotions have been in front of before. So I wonder, you know, are they getting a deal on the talent, or is Impact looking for a little bit of a kickback from the promotion because of the fact that they're putting the shows on their TV? I don't really know the situation, but it's a really good question and not one that we've really heard a definitive answer to. I would assume that the promotions are paying the talent, whether it's at a discounted rate or at a full rate. I don't know, but I would assume that the promotions are paying the talent, and maybe, you know, maybe that's all it is. Maybe Impact's looking at it as going, hey, if you allow us to air the content, it's a way for us to get our guys paid on a show without us having to pay the guys, you know, for the show. Like in this case tonight, it's a way for El Patron and Moose to get a payday without the money coming from Impact Wrestling. And they get a show and they get a match to air on their TV. Maybe that's part of the deal. But yeah, I don't know if we've heard an official answer on that from anyone from the company. Andrew, am I wrong there? Do you know if Ed Nordholm or Don Callis or Scott DeMore or anybody has explained how these relationships have been working?
I don't believe so. And no, in some of the bigger promotions, I just assumed it was like a fair trade. You know, we'll send some guys there. You send some guys here. Smaller,
yeah, like AAA and Pro Wrestling Noah and stuff like that. Yeah, I would assume so too.
Yeah. Some of these smaller promotions, I just assumed. I have not heard anything either. I always thought it was them saying like, hey, if you bring in these guys, you'll be on TV. And I wouldn't have even assumed there'd be a discount, but there could be. I will try and look into that. I know a couple different promoters, so I'll see if they have any idea about that.
No, that would be interesting, though, because there's ways they could do it where maybe it's a way to provide an incentive for these promotions to pay their guys. Like, let's say, I don't know what the fees are, but let's say El Patron and Moose, you know, would normally cost you, between the two guys, you know, $2,000, let's say, $1,000 a piece. I have no idea. I'm just throwing it. I've heard some of the rates for some of the guys have been, you know, if you're, you know, Patron's probably up in that range, I would imagine. You know, I don't see him doing anything for less than $500 a match anyway. So let's say, for sake of argument, it's $2,000. Well, maybe somebody like Future Stars Wrestling might look at that and say, well, two grand's a lot of money. You know, even though we're running a pretty good show and we've got a pretty good crowd here in Vegas, that's a lot of cash. But is it a way for Impact, who's serving as the booking agent, to provide an incentive for that promotion to take both those guys by saying, hey, you know what? If you take these guys and you pay them, Now what we're going to do is we're going to put that match on our show. We're going to give your company more exposure. I mean, it could be something as simple as that too, where, like you said, they're not paying a discounted rate, but they're getting the added benefit of not only using those two guys in their promotion, but also getting their promotion in front of some other eyeballs as well.
Yeah, it probably helps sell some tickets as well if they can put that on the poster, like, come to the show and you know, we're taping this for Impact. That's probably a bit of...
I know Border City Wrestling has done it, I believe, and has called some of their shows Impact Tapings.
There you go. Yeah. You know?
So, yeah, no, absolutely. Anything else, Ryan?
I guess my final question is there any chance that Johnny Fairplay could be returning to Impact Wrestling since they gave him a little bit of a flashback to the old days of where he took that big bump over the top rope?
That was, you know, that's another good question. I don't know. It seemed kind of random, though. I think it was it the Pluto flashback of the week or one of the flashbacks they do? The one this week was, if you missed the show, was Brian Urlacher press slamming Johnny Fairplay out of the ring onto a bunch of guys at ringside. So I certainly think so. I mean, hey, he's a guy that I think they could utilize certainly as a mouthpiece for somebody. I don't know specifically who, but it definitely stood out as being really random, like you said, Ryan. Usually they don't do things like that without a purpose. I mean, the other flashback was Moose's debut, and they showed that right before the Moose El Patron match. So all of them have kind of had a little bit of a purpose. I think they showed Austin Aries winning his first world title a couple of weeks ago, right after he won the world title. So they just haven't been random like this one was tonight. So yeah, no, I don't know whether or not it will lead to something, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were to bring someone like that in.
I think I would be surprised if they came back. He's a friend of the Torch. So I just don't know how much the average wrestling fan would remember him. Maybe he's close with Don Callis or something. He had one of the sweetest deals in TNA history. I think he made like $150,000 a year to show up four times or something. They just never used him and signed him to a deal, but yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't know what else he is up to. So for me, it would be random, but maybe it would make more sense to the casual or regular fan.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the call. Again, new number this week, if you missed it earlier, 646-721-9828 is the new phone number here on the PW Torch Livecast, 646-721-9828. Andrew and I are also going to do a VIP after show for PW Torch VIP members right after the live cast, and we will make our Elimination Chamber picks, because that's coming up on Sunday, where I don't have a very good history. Ever since we started making picks, do you know off the top of your head if I've won one show?
So this is going to be our 10th head-to-head contest. You've won one.
Awesome. I'm doing great.
I've won four, and then we've tied four times. So tonight could be the night. We'll turn this around.
We'll see. I doubt it, but we'll see. I guess the fact that I can't predict things as well as I would hope is a good sign. It means that I'm surprised by... Well, I wouldn't say it's always a good sign to be surprised. There are some surprises that aren't good surprises.
That's especially in wrestling, yes. Yeah.
Like Alberto El Patron potentially challenging for the world title again.
Yeah, that's not a good one at all.
I would say that would not be a good surprise. All right, let's go to our second break, though. We got to get to another commercial when we come back. We'll look at some of the other segments on Impact that we haven't talked about yet. And again, you can give us a call at our new number, 646-721-9828, here on the PW Torch Livecast.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Back here on the PW Torch Livecast, it is Thursday, February 22nd, 2018. We are breaking down, Andrew Socek and I are breaking down this week's edition of Impact Wrestling, which just wrapped up about 30 minutes ago. And let's get through some of the segments that we haven't talked about yet. We've hit on some random portions of the show already. But let's get through some of the pieces we haven't talked about yet. They open the show with LAX against the Cult of Lee, Trevor Lee and Caleb Conley, in a non-title match. LAX, of course, the current Impact World Tag Team Champions, but this was a non-title match, and Trevor Lee grabbed a handful of tights and ended up getting the win for his team, so I'm sure that's going to lead to a title match at some point. What were your thoughts here? I mean, I'm not a big fan of non-title matches when the champions, oh, I mean, of course, if it's a non-title match, you would assume the champion was involved, but I'm overall not a big fan of these scenarios where you put the champions in non-title matches.
I'm not either. It's just it's kind of silly to me, and it ruins the like the first time ever effect, because you ideally I think you want to build up something longer and then have them fight when the titles are on the line. And this just seemed too rushed to me, partly due to that there's so few tag teams in the company. This is like WWE's booking crutch that they go to over and over and over again. Non-title match. The challengers win. You do the exact same match again. No, I didn't really care for that approach at all.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the match was good, but you're right. It's the booking philosophy of we're going to do this non-title. To me, it gives it away. I mean, as soon as they said at the beginning of the match that it was a non-title match, I said to myself, well, you know the finish now. You know, the heels are going to win. They're probably going to cheat, and it's going to set up a title match down the road. I'd much rather see them give Trevor Lee and Caleb Conley another win. Give them a clean win over somebody else. Make them feel like a legitimate threat. The problem is, though, like we've pointed out in the past, there's no depth in their tag team division whatsoever. So you would have had to, I think, pair two singles guys together for them to get, you know, a legitimate win. Unless you put them over like OVE or something like that, which that really wouldn't make sense at this point. But yeah, I mean, there's really nobody there for them to do that with. But I think you're touting all your partner promotions. Bring in a tag team from somewhere else that has some type of recognizable name value. Put two singles guys together and have the Cult of Lee go over in that match and say and call it a number one contender match if you really are desperate. But to me, this just didn't make a whole lot of sense. You give away the finish. And the thing that bothers me with it is you don't see it happen anywhere else. You know, if you're following boxing or you're following MMA, how many times do you see a champion in a fight where the title's not on the line? You know, it never happens.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Unless, you know, somebody misses weight or something. I think I've seen an MMA where a challenger misses weight, so the title's not on the line, but they'll still have the fight. But it's very rare. You know, it's very rare. And even then, it's booked as a title match. I can't think of one example where you've had a champion booked in a match where the title is not at stake. In any of any type of legitimate sport, so I'm not a fan of the strategy at all. And to me, I thought it just gave the finish away. I think you knew from the very beginning that Conley and Lee were going to get the win.
Yes, completely agree. And another thing that stood out to me too during this match was, and I've harped on this a few times, is just the Cult of Lee and what that means. Sanjay Dutt kind of put him over. Trevor Lee, he's like, oh, he's like David Koresh. Yeah, he has one follower. Like that's not an equivalent whatsoever. And they talk that up. Like, how does a guy like Lee get, you know, somebody to follow him? Well, I don't know. He has one guy and it's never been explained. Like, it's so lazy. I see, and this is disappointing so far, like Trevor Lee comes out. He has like the bandana over his face. He's acting goofy. It's still a complete waste of his talent. Yeah, and just going back to your point, I mean, there's three tag teams in the company. Why can't management just say these guys have the number one contendership because there's only one other team? I mean, why even go through the effort of like, here's the match, and then we're going to give you the exact same match 2 weeks from now?
Well, that's the thing, yeah. I mean, it's probably going to be, I don't know if they've announced, I think they did announce this actually tonight, that it's going to happen on that March 8th episode. So literally 2 weeks from now, we're going to see the same match again.
Yeah, that's never made sense to me. We've seen it once, so you see it again. It's less interesting to me, even though the titles are on the line, because it's already been done.
After that, Brian Cage beat Hunter Law in 1:03. I thought this was another good, impressive showing for Cage. I thought the announcers were good here. I don't often praise the Impact announce team, but I thought the announcers were good here, really getting across how destructive he was. And like you pointed out last week, they've kept his his high-flying attack, not even to the minimum. They've kept it non-existent, which I think they'll pull out when the matches get bigger.
Yeah, I think that's a smart approach. He did bust out. I can't remember if he did a dropkick last week. I don't think he did, but he did one tonight. So showing a little bit of that. I felt this, like I loved last week's. This one just seemed a little bit clunkier to me. Maybe it was just the jobber. But I did like the announcing. I like that they're putting over the fact that this is only going to go a minute due to how good this guy is. So yeah, two weeks in a row, that is a hit for me, the way that they are using Brian Cage so far.
I'd be fine if they did stuff like this for 2 months. I mean, if you were give it 2 or 3 months of just and then, you know, do a month of jobbers and then do a month of, you know, lower level guys on the card where he's continuing to do the same thing. And I think I laid out last week, you know, what I'd like to see them do is then build up, you know, sometime around Slammiversary. OK, we're going to put him in a competitive match against whomever. Pick your guy, you know. Who's the guy you're going to sacrifice to get Brian Cage over? Maybe it's Moose, maybe it's whoever. And say, this is finally, Cage is going to have someone who is physically his size, and it's going to be a competitive match. And then, boom, you have Cage win that match in a minute. And now you can play up the announcers going, who's going to stop this guy? You know, now you're in a situation where you thought you had finally had that competitive match, and Brian Cage wins that one in a minute. And then I think, you know, like we were saying last week, you could get him to a point where Bound for Glory, I mean, I think you could get him to be in your main event at Bound for Glory for the world title. I think you can do that over a 10-month story. You know, he's not going to get there for Slammiversary, and you don't want to rush it, but Bound for Glory in late October, early November, whenever that pay-per-view is going to be, I think you could definitely have him in position on an undefeated streak where he's just been, you know, steamrolling through everybody. I think you could put him in a match for the world title at Bound for Glory, and it's going to feel like a big deal.
I think so too, and I think that's a smart approach. If you go back to when Paul Heyman was talking with TNA, Daniel Bryan had recently been fired by WWE, and Paul Heyman's idea is when he went to TNA, if he had gone there, he was going to take Bryan and he was going to have him just steamroll guys, and like you said, he was just going to beat a bunch of guys in a single minute. And then on the other side, he was going to build up a massive heel. And then down the line, he would fight that heel who had been built up, and he was going to beat him in a minute. So I would always in my mind had wanted to see that play out, even though Brian did have a tremendous success in WWE. I think something like that would work. And Impact should honestly be looking at like what or like Ryback even. I mean, you and I aren't fans of him.
Yeah.
But you know, he was squashed guys for months and months, and it started catching on. And then finally he main evented a pay-per-view against CM Punk. And while some of the hardcore fans never bought into it because they saw him as a Goldberg clone, he was getting over with a big sizable portion of the crowd. And, you know, there's just not enough guys who steamroll people these days in quick and effective fashion. So I think they have something here. They just need to be careful with how they do it.
Yeah, and especially, too, the way that they're booking their shows, you know, that you could get a guy like Ryback or whatever, bring him in for a night.
Or
bring him in for one taping if you wanted to. One taping, you could get, you know, probably 2 months out, 2 months worth of television out of him over a 3 or 4 day span. So you can do that pretty easily. Not just Ryback, but guys like him, bigger guys. I don't know. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I'm sure if you go through a list of, okay, who's out there as far as indie guys go who kind of look like big monster guys. I mean, Ryback would certainly be one of them, but you could do that and bring guys in even for one-offs, you know. I don't know if they're going to – a guy like Ryback may not want to come in on a one-off and just put over Brian Cage and have that be the end of it. But, you know, their Impact is in a position where maybe they could do that. You know, maybe you could work out something with Ryback where he comes in and puts over Brian Cage in a minute on the first day of tapings, and then over the second couple of day of tapings, you do something to let him build himself back up so that he still comes out, you know, relatively even to where he was before. But yeah, I mean, they're in a spot where they could definitely do stuff like that, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they do with Cage, because it seems like they're going to do something different with him than they've done with pretty much anybody else.
Yeah. Oh, I would love if Ryback came in and jobbed to him in a single minute, and then we never saw him again.
That'd be great. I mean, that's what I would prefer. I don't think we'd see it happen, but that's what I'd prefer.
Yeah, I don't think he'd agree to that. But it's, you know, I'm glad they never brought him in, because they have Cage right now, and it's a smarter decision, and I'm sure a much cheaper one.
Then we went to Destiny World Wrestling, not Dream World Wrestling, I apologize. Destiny World Wrestling up in Toronto. Matt Sydal retained the Impact Grand Championship in 6 minutes and then read a proclamation. He beat Petey Williams, should include that. And then he read a proclamation from his spiritual guide and said that it is his destiny to become X Division champion on March 8th, and he challenged Ishimori. What did you think on this match here?
I did not care for this one. Petey Williams returned to the company. He had a lot of fan support. Could have been because he was in Canada, but he had a little something going, and that's completely gone. I mean, we see it happen time and time again. Wrestlers get a little bit of something, it's gone. Desmond Xavier, Garza Jr., now Petey Williams is that guy. These matches that are 6 minutes, I just nothing. They don't do anything for me. If I wasn't covering the show, I would probably turn the channel for 5 minutes, come back and see what's happening. Because to me, they still just feel like turn on YouTube, go watch a random match, and there you go. It's pretty much the same thing. They don't look good enough. And Petey Williams, I think, deserved a bit better. Give him a promo before the match. He's just there, and I just. Did not care for it much. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, the only thing I really noted in my report was the production elements that I thought were good, which was including the hard cam kind of taking place in the corner. But other than that, you know, wasn't a big fan of the match. I agree with you that it kind of seemed like they caught lightning in a bottle a little bit with Petey Williams coming out of those Canada tapings, and now he's losing in 6 minutes to Matt Sydal. And he hasn't been on the show for several weeks, too. So this is the first time we've seen him in, I think, probably about a month. And
yeah.
This is what happens. So,
I mean, and just, yeah, that's another, it's just such a strange thing. I mean, even look at like Fall Abad too. Like he's getting a natural crowd reaction, and all they've done with him in these past few weeks is had him eat M&Ms. I don't know what Damore and Callis are thinking right now, actually.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, if you read some of the, I had some people that were at the tapings live who would email me or send me a message on Twitter and be like, hey, Fall Abad's getting the best reaction of anybody. He's getting the best reaction of the week at the TV tapings. And I think even in some of the WrestlePro shows, people were saying, you know, hey, he's getting the biggest reaction. And like you said, another one. He's vanished. You haven't seen him. Desmond Xavier is a guy that we were both big fans of. Haven't seen him in what feels like months now. It's very confusing why some of these guys go away for long periods of time.
Oh, just like them off the top of my head, like, you know, why not take a guy like Fall Abad, roll the dice and put him over like EC3 if they know he's on his way out. I don't know how EC3 is leaving, but I'm guessing it's not losing to Fall Abad. Like,
yeah,
Fall Abad's cheap. If it fails, it fails. But either way, EC3 is gone. I'm sure, you know, if Impact beats him again, it's not going to mean anything. Like, try to make somebody new. I don't know. I think they need to take some sort of chances like that now and again.
100%. Totally agree. From there, they went to Jimmy Jacobs in Congo Kong. This is the Grandma Jenny segment that we talked about a little earlier in the show. But they brought out – oh, no, Grandma Jenny, I think, interrupted them, right? I don't think they brought her out. But they were calling out Abyss, and then Joseph Park came out and said that Abyss was going to stay buried deep inside. He promised his family that they wouldn't he wouldn't bring out Abyss ever again. Then Joseph Park tried to attack Jimmy Jacobs, and Congo Kong attacked him from behind. So Grandma Jenny was forced to sit there and watch her beloved Joseph Park get beaten up by Congo Kong. I guess if you're a fan of, I don't know, this reminded me, this felt like it was written by Vince Russo. Like that was my initial reaction. I go, this kind of feels like it was a Vince Russo creation.
Yeah. Stuff with the Joseph Park, it walks a very fine line. Sometimes it's on the right side and it makes me laugh and it's a guilty pleasure. And sometimes it's like this and it just falls flat. It's not really funny. It's not really interesting. She wasn't very good. I don't quite know what Jimmy Jacobs is doing. He's just not connecting with me yet in his act. Where's Chandler Park? Why didn't any other baby faces run out to help a 80-year-old woman about to be beat up?
That's a very good point, one I did not think of.
Yeah, I did not care for this at all.
Then they showed Matt Sydal. He was backstage talking to his spiritual guide, saying that he read his proclamation. One funny note I had noted here, you could clearly see that Matt Sydal, while talking on the phone, was not on a phone call.
Yep.
You could see, I believe he had a text screen open. So he was texting someone and talking to no one. You know, that's a silly little thing, but it's like, hey, whoever was shooting that or whoever was producing that should have picked up on it and said, hey, turn to the side so that we can't see your screen, so that it's not clear that you're not speaking to anyone. I thought that was just kind of an avoidable little thing that someone should have picked up on.
Well, it's not like
it's nitpicking. I get it, but it's a small little thing that someone should have picked up on.
It is. I mean, but if he was like 10 feet away and you had eagle eyes and it's like, hey, that's not the right screen, then I would get it. But the way he was framed, that was, you know, pretty big on, I don't know, I have like a 50-inch TV, so that was pretty big on there that, like, yeah, that's not the right screen. I could just chalk it up to them missing it, but it was kind of funny.
We already talked about this segment, but El Patron beat Moose in 7 minutes clean. This was from Future Stars Wrestling in Las Vegas. One note I had here were the antler lights hanging from the ceiling were a nice touch. Yeah. Did you see those things? The giant antler chandeliers that were hanging from the ceiling?
I must have somehow missed that. I don't know if I was jotting down some notes or...
Yeah, it was like any... I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of time spent in the ring, but almost any time the match was in the ring, you could see kind of hanging over the ring these giant chandeliers, it looked like. But they were deer antlers. Like, they looked like they were made out of antlers. They were, looked like the match was being taped at a hunting lodge somewhere.
I'll have to go back and check that out. Something that kind of just gave me a good laugh is that El Patron attacked Moose with a plastic trash can. Oh, and he just sold it.
Yeah.
Like, why would you jump off the top rope with a plastic garbage can and hit somebody? Like you could do that to me and I wouldn't fall over. I mean, I would be annoyed, but I wouldn't like be knocked out on the ground for a minute.
Yeah, no, I thought that was funny too. And he sold it a lot, you know. Yes. I have that. In fact, the thing that's kind of funny, I have those exact same barrels in front of my house right now. I own those exact same trash bags. They probably got them at Home Depot. That's where I got mine.
If I was Moose, I would be pissed off and be like, I can't believe you made me sell that during the match. Like, what was I going to do? Just real silly.
And I just thought of this now, but it is kind of funny that Moose was in the match with the giant antlers hanging above the ring.
Oh, some deep stuff there.
Maybe it was done on purpose.
Symbolism, yeah.
Then they aired a video package on Rosemary versus Hanaya. Mackenzie Mitchell interviewed EC3 and Tyrus. Then Bobby Lashley and Eddie Edwards beat OVE in 9 minutes. Edwards had a Boston Knee Party, I think, on Jake Crist. I still can't tell these guys apart for the win. Are you confused by this match at all? Because they seemed to set up a big angle 2 weeks ago when OVE kidnapped Bobby Lashley. And now here we are 2 weeks later and Bobby Lashley, well, not even Lashley, Eddie Edwards, who came out to help Bobby Lashley last week, gets the win. And are they done? I don't know. What do you think? Do you think they go somewhere else from here? Or do you think this is just all done now and they're going to move on to something else?
Yeah, this is an example of kind of what's worrying me already about this new era. I mean, chapter one, they beat up Bobby Lashley and throw him in a car. I thought it looked kind of cool, but we didn't know what happened to him. I mean, would they just drive him to a Dairy Queen or something and beat him up?
Yeah.
Or,
and also, why? It's not like OVE has no history with Bobby Lashley whatsoever, so why? So,
yeah, exactly.
And a week two, before, they were both heels.
Yes, randomness. And then week two... Lashley defeats Callahan, and then week three, a makeshift tag team who just hated each other beat the former tag team champions cleanly. I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, like you said, very weird, very weird, very random. First of all, why did Eddie Edwards come out and save Lashley last week? I don't think they did a very good job explaining why. I mean, very simply just said that, hey, you know, we don't have and they did this a little bit, but they never really said this. You know, Eddie Edwards was talking about, hey, we have a history, but we don't need to like each other. We just need to team up and be, and team together and fight a common goal and all that other stuff. But why did Edwards feel the need to come out and save Lashley the previous week? That was never really explained. Also, like you said, what happens here? I mean, now Bobby Lashley, who's on his way out of the company, has a win over Sami Callihan, and his team has a win over OVE. So you've now sacrificed OVE twice on consecutive weeks for a guy that's probably leaving. That feels a little strange.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, I mean, maybe we'll find out more, but they didn't even play it up because I figured OVE would get back up. They beat those guys up 3-on-2. They'd keep the program going, and I'm sure they will. But this was a weak entry in this chapter, and I don't get it. I mean, OVE has had some momentum. Eddie Edwards has always just been kind of there. so they've taken a cooler act and sacrificing it to this, yeah, makeshift tag team doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Then they went to the main event. Johnny Impact beat EC3 in 18 minutes. The Tyrus EC3 relationship ended as quickly as it was rekindled. They got back together last week, and EC3 shoved Tyrus at ringside. Tyrus ended up walking out, so that relationship is over, apparently. And Impact gets the win, so he will challenge Austin Aries on March 8th. What did you think of the main event?
Yeah, the match is pretty good. God, yeah, that's all I have.
That's pretty much where I stopped, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than okay. It wasn't great. I did like the repairing. It's too unfortunate. I thought EC3 and Tyrus, they have chemistry on air. EC3 has really been damaged the past few months. Of course, he's not sticking around, but it almost made me wish that he was, and he could team back up with Tyrus for a bit. But they had to end it, and we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, it was just a decent way to end the night, but nothing really about that or the show really made me more excited for next week.
Yeah, I thought there were some impressive parts of the match. I thought the TK3 off the top was impressive looking, and there were definitely some cool spots and Johnny Impact. I mean, there were a couple of near falls where Johnny Impact had kicked out of scenarios where you kind of thought that the match was over, especially when EC3 had his foot on the ropes and things like that. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought that this was one of the better main events they could have put together just from a star power and notoriety standpoint. We've discussed how their roster is not very deep, and especially from a top of the card perspective and a star power perspective, there really isn't a lot there. So I thought this is one of the bigger matches that they could have really put on TV when you think about it. I mean, there's not many guys with bigger names than these two in the company right now. Maybe Austin Aries, Moose, El Patron, and Eddie Edwards, Lashley. But yeah, that's really their top of the card is pretty thin. And these were two guys who were squarely, in the top of the card, at least right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's smart, I guess, to have, book the match, have Impact go over because they knew something, that he wasn't going to be there much longer, EC3. But yeah, I don't know what he's going to be doing for the next few weeks, but I would have rather have seen them taking a chance on somebody else because Impact, as a top baby face, it's just not going to work. I wrote this down, at the beginning of the show, he just looked like such a tool. Somebody's driving him in a golf cart.
Yeah.
And he just has his luggage on its wheels, being carried down, for like a couple hundred feet. And then he jumps out. Not even like it was so dumb. It is so dumb. Like that's something a heel would do. Go up to somebody. Hey, drive me around while I have my luggage dragging on the ground. He's just so lame as a face. He can be a good heel, but he's painfully miscast right now.
He can't help himself.
Yeah.
He's over the top cheesy. Like we're to the point where I find it hard to be interested in him as a babyface. I think you're absolutely right that he's so much better off as a heel. I think that that's where he's going to be. If they ever do make that move, and I feel like they need to do it sooner rather than later, I think that he could have a good run as a heel because he's got this kind of natural cockiness about him that I think people would naturally find detestable. If that's the right word for it. He does. It kind of shines through in situations like that where, like you said, he's kind of he's got this cockiness about him where, like, hey, look at me, as he's dragging his bag being driven. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like, hey, the attention should be on me. All eyes should be on me. And I think that people naturally don't find that an attractive quality. So I think he'd be good as a heel. He'd be good as a heel without really changing any of his mannerisms, really.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, like this. I mean, like they say, take your normal character, your normal self, turn it up to 11. You know, like Steve Austin did, The Rock did. I mean, yeah, Johnny Impact. Some people are likable, like Daniel Bryan. You can't help but like them. But John Morrison, Johnny Nitro, he's just it's just not him. So turn him heel. He's done some great work in Lucha Underground. He was a solid heel in WWE, but there's just something about him. It's his humor. It's his show offiness. It just doesn't click in a meaningful way. And the longer they try to do it, it's not going to work.
And then if he's a heel, he can say, you know, he's going to bring people to Slam Town all he wants, and it's not going to matter because he's a heel and Slam Town is dumb and heels say dumb things. So that would all work out just fine.
And turd cutters.
Yeah. I mean, Slam Town and turd. He's gonna take someone to Slam Town. He's gonna take a turd cutter to Slam Town. Is basically what we know about Johnny Impact as a baby.
That's
face.
A T-shirt right there.
That's what he tells us. He's taking turd cutters to Slam Town, and that's that, I guess. So
yeah.
That was this week's episode. There really isn't much more to add to it than that. I didn't like it as much as last week's. I still thought it was okay. I thought that some of the production. I mean, not one of my favorites, but I'll say this. I thought this was better than the show, I think it was 2 weeks ago, their second show. That's the one where I really felt like it went off the rails a little bit.
I think so, too. I'll have to check our overall scores for how we rated these. But, yeah, I mean, last week's was good, and it was encouraging. And then this week took a pretty decent step back for me. The momentum didn't continue. They didn't give us any hooks for next week. I mean, they announced some matches, but yeah, nothing. Whatever they built last week is gone now. There's some troubling booking signs, and I really just wish D'Amore and Callis. I don't know if it's a money thing or what it is. I would like to just sit them down and say, why do you think it's a good idea to show half matches that look like garbage on TV? Like, what's the philosophy behind this? I'm baffled. It doesn't look good. It was like 15 minutes worth of tonight's show. So it's purpose. It's bad. And I think it's going to turn people away.
Well, that's about all we got. I mean, that was Impact this week. We got a new phone number. If you're listening to the show on demand, remember for next week, our new number is 646-721-9828. That's the new number here in the livecast. 646-721-9828. Andrew, anything else you want to add before we head over to the VIP after show and preview and give our predictions for Elimination Chamber?
Round 10. You can check me out on Twitter, Andrew Socek, S-O-U-C-E-K. I will plug my book again. I released an ebook about 10 days ago, WWE's 100 Worst Moments of 2017. Mike did the foreword and revealed his worst moment of the year. Wade Keller revealed his as well. Otherwise, I just rant and rave and have fun complaining about WWE. So if that's your sort of thing, if you like the wrestle crapness of the wrestling world, I think you'll enjoy it. It's $2.99 on Amazon. Otherwise, check out pwpodcast.com. Written recaps of all the biggest wrestling podcasts out there. So check it out.
I will also plug Andrew's book. I'm about halfway through it, so I'm enjoying it. It's some of the stuff I was surprised at, some of the things I'd forgotten about. I mean, considering we're talking about 1 year, right?
we are. Yeah.
It's not like this stuff happened, you know, years ago. But some of the stuff, especially earlier in the year, as I was going, like I said, I'm about halfway through, I found myself saying, like, "Ooh, man, that was bad," and I forgot about that. One of the things that I did forget about, honestly, which I think it's crazy, but I forgot that Randy Orton was the one who won the Royal Rumble. Like that happened in 2018.
Yes. Doesn't it? I mean, that in my mind, it's like, maybe that happened in 2012, and it's like, oh my God, no, that happened last year. Somebody literally thought That was a good idea. I rant on that a bit. Quite a few other Randy Orton related things, Bray Wyatt things, how Bayley was treated. There's a lot in there. If that's your sort of thing, you'll have some fun.
And now Orton has hair.
Yeah, that's freaky too. That might have to be in next year's edition.
I mean, you want to talk about going back in time? John Cena and Randy Orton both have hair.
Yeah,
I'm tapping out on that. I mean, there's nothing else to say. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. Andrew and I are going to head over now for VIP members to the VIP after show. We will preview Elimination Chamber. We will continue with our witty remarks when it comes to WWE as we give predictions and preview Elimination Chamber, which comes up on Sunday. So that will do it for the live cast this week. If you're a VIP member, we will talk to you in a second. If you're not a VIP member, Wade Keller is going to tell you more on why you should be right now.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The every single day Wade Keller Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Wade Keller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. This is live.